Welcome to Cool Climate Living. I'm Susan Lacey. In today's program, we'll be looking at something that most of us take for granted, a healthy heart. Hidden away there in our chest, pumping blood around the body night and day, we often forget that it deserves our attention. How do we keep it working the way it should? Today, I'll be talking with a couple of experts about things that can go wrong and what we can actively do to maintain good heart health. And I'll also talk to someone who has suffered a heart attack, plus a triple bypass, and we can learn something from his experience. Now, my first guest for today's program is Kerry Doyle. Kerry is the CEO of the Heart Foundation in New South Wales. Kerry, thank you very much for joining us today. Now, besides being the CEO of an extremely busy organisation, I understand that you like to practice what you preach and you're really committed to your own physical fitness.
That's right, I am. I try and exercise every day, get the 30 minutes that's recommended as my minimum.
That's right, and I bet having 5 children and 10 grandchildren helps to keep you very fit as well.
It does, indeed. It certainly keeps me busy on top of the job.
Now, another thing that I understand about your background, and one of the reasons why you're very passionate about heart health, is that you lost your own father some years ago.
I did. My father had a massive and ultimately fatal heart attack at age 76, which these days is not really elderly. And despite having a whole range of really wonderful services in place, such as 000, cardiac care ambulances and CPR, all of which actually come on the back of Heart Foundation advocacy and research, by the way, he was unable to be saved. So while that isn't the reason I took the job, it certainly fuels my passion for seeing outcomes from it.
Oh, I bet it does. Kerry, tell us a little bit more about what the Heart Foundation is.
So for 60 years, we've been the peak body for cardiovascular health in Australia. And what that means is that we are the people who educate the public about the risk factors associated with heart disease and what you can do about them, about the warning signs of heart attack and what you should do. We work with healthcare professionals on the same issues. So the Heart Foundation is the body that develops guidelines that are then implemented by health professionals to try and get not only best practice, but consistency of practice across the country. We provide a helpline that offers support to people who may be at risk or have suffered a heart event and their families and carers, and that's a 1300 line. I'd encourage people to have a look at that on our website. And then possibly the thing that we're known most for, we are the biggest non-government funder of cardiovascular research. Research provides hope of eventually a cure or really strong treatment, and we're also active advocates to government for more funding, systems change and legislation that can help people live longer, healthier lives.
Okay, that's a terrific summary. With respect to the research that you're funding, who undertakes that research?
The best people in their field anywhere in Australia.
Okay, so they might be in hospitals or universities or...
Correct, or in independent institutes. I mean, we've funded people at Sydney University, we've funded people at Monash, we fund people in Western Australia, South Australia, and as you say, many of them are hospital-based. We have a lot of what we call clinician researchers who are both scientists and clinicians, and for me, that's exactly what you want, somebody who's hungry for continuous learning and innovation to be the person that treats you if you do become unwell. The unifying factor of how the Heart Foundation funds research, besides it being clearly, you know, cardiovascular research, is that it goes through what is regarded as the world's best practice peer review processes. So the research that we fund through the generous donations of ordinary Australians by and large, you know that it's the best research in this country and the best researcher is doing it.
Kerry, as you know, our transmission zone is the Central West. Let's talk about some of the risk factors that do affect the people who live within the Central West region. What are the main risk factors? How do Central West residents stack up against the rest of New South Wales?
So, not great news, but of course the good news is that we can do something about what I'm about to describe to you. But the death rate in your region is about 74 out of every 100,000 people, higher than the state average of about 67. This is not an area you want to be ranking in at all. The things behind that, the risk factors behind that, are 21% of residents in the Central West region smoke. Now, that's higher than the state and national averages by between about 5 and 7%.
Good heavens.
21% have high blood pressure. Now, high blood pressure is one of those things that we term the potential silent killer, because unless you have your blood pressure checked, you won't necessarily have any symptoms that you can respond to. Now, this is quite telling and really pertinent to some of the work that we're pushing forward with this month. 73% of people in the region are not physically active enough for good health. And levels of physical activity only need to be around half an hour a day, but the other important aspect is that you can undo the benefit of that exercise if the rest of your day is spent being sedentary. Around 38% are obese, and that is a risk factor not just for heart disease, but also for a range of other chronic diseases such as diabetes. And over a third of your population have high cholesterol, and again, that's another potential silent killer, and you can't know that you have high cholesterol unless you have the appropriate blood test ordered by your GP to test that. Now, just before I finish on this particular topic, we have recently secured the commitment and implementation by the federal government to put in place a Medicare item number which allows for you to recoup some of your costs when you go to a GP and ask for a heart health check. A heart health check from your GP will talk about your family history, it will talk about these lifestyle risk factors that I've just described, and it will look at your blood pressure and your cholesterol, and from that it will determine your risk of having a heart event in the next 5 years. For Australians over the age of 45 and for Aboriginal people over the age of 30, this is a really critical thing to engage with, and you probably should be checking on this annually. It's a really key step that you can take to start to manage and understand your own heart health.
Do you think that people are either reluctant to go to a GP for these kinds of tests because they think they're perfectly all right? Or do you think that sometimes a GP is just too far away, because a lot of people are living in quite isolated rural areas here in the Central West?
I think it's all of those things. We know that access to a GP is a determining factor in people's attendance and certainly their regular attendance. But having said that, most of us will go to a GP for something, you know, once a year. So I guess what I would suggest to those folk for whom it is, you know, a real journey, that women, if you're going to have your sort of annual, you know, breast or cervical check, get the heart health check as part of that if you can.
Well, a lot of people are getting flu shots these days, aren't they, on an annual basis?
That's right. So use the opportunity. I mean, I would really encourage people, if they haven't ever had a heart health check and they are over 45 or, as I say, over 30 and Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander, make the effort, because you'll thank yourself for it and your family will thank you for it, whether it's a totally clean bill of health or you find some things that you can manage to ensure that both the quality and length of your life are improved. But for those who maybe are able to sort of have those visits regularly, plug this in, ask for it at your next visit. You just can't know what you don't know about.
Yeah, look, that's a terrific message, Kerry. It really is.
So I just think that's really important. And the tyranny of distance, as I said, is an issue, but I think we have to work out ways to manage it. I think one of the other challenges is that people are frightened of other diseases and think heart disease has come lower in their consciousness as a really serious issue, but it's the single leading cause of death in Australia. And it's not only death from heart disease, but it's disability, because for every moment you delay after a heart attack, and if you survive it, you may be losing, or you will be losing, muscle. And that means that your heart isn't going to function necessarily optimally afterwards. So it's not a small problem, it's a huge problem. 51 lives every day.
Yes. Well, it's higher rate, isn't it, than cancer, death by cancer?
As a single cause, but, you know, and I wouldn't want to minimise the fear and the impact of cancer. what I want people to do is take cardiovascular disease and heart disease as seriously as a community as we do take cancer. Most of us are pretty vigilant about those, cancer checks and cancer screenings that are available, but we know that people are significantly less vigilant about their heart health.
Kerry, let's talk about some of the warning signs that people may become aware of so that they can take that early action that you've just described.
So look, most of us think of a heart attack, so let's focus on the warning signs of a heart attack. Most of us think of a heart attack as the sort of Hollywood heart attack, the crushing chest pain, you know, the band across the chest. And that is certainly a very common sign and sometimes the first time that people realise what is happening to them. Too many people think, oh, look, it's probably only indigestion or something like that. So really be aware of that and don't be afraid to ring 000 if that is your first and only symptom.
Mm.
Other symptoms that might happen before concurrently with that crushing chest pain will be things like nausea, sweating, dizziness. But importantly, some people never experience that crushing chest pain. They might have jaw pain, shoulder pain, pain, up in their back. But that is usually accompanied by sweating and nausea. And the one thing that everybody describes, because we do have people who talk to us who've had no pain at all, but they all have this overwhelming feeling that something is not right, which most of us don't have if we're suffering from indigestion. And that's the spectrum of warning signs that you might have is not vast, but it is quite broad. And I would really encourage people to go on to the Heart Foundation's website and have a look and understand what those might be. We've also got some things for you to think about, because people will put off ringing an ambulance or whatever, second-guessing themselves. So we've got a little bit of a guide that says if you're experiencing any of this and it doesn't go away in a very brief period, the only thing you should do next is to ring 000. It's just critical. Don't wait. Don't wait for your husband or your wife to come home or your friend. Don't drive yourself to the hospital. And all of those things happen. If you're experiencing these symptoms, ring 000. That's the way you will save your life, or if you're witnessing somebody else going through this, that's the way you will potentially save their lives. And I just, while it sounds a bit glib, nobody ever died of embarrassment, and we're losing 51 people every day to heart disease.
Well, that's a very strong message. Thank you very much, Kerry. Now, perhaps we could just move on past the time that someone is experiencing these warning signs, and they've got themselves to hospital, and they've gone through whatever treatment has been decided is necessary for them. What about when they come out?
So the message I would put to people here is when you come out, you're not fixed. And I don't want that to be a scary message, because clearly if you've had a stent put in, it's open, the blood's pumping, the heart's working again. Mm. But the underlying reasons that got you there in the first place and the ability to try and avoid that and strengthen yourself, that is not dealt with. And the way to deal with those things and to significantly reduce your chance of having a second or even a third heart attack is to go through cardiac rehabilitation. Now, there are centres that do this, but it's also possible to try and engage remotely. And I'd encourage people, again, to look at our website or talk to their local hospital when they're or wherever they're discharged from and find out what the options are that will fit into their lifestyle. You will, A, have the support of other people who are going through this and the support of whoever's running the program. You'll get guidance around things like exercise and diet. You'll be supported if, unfortunately, you're still smoking or you are a smoker, to quit. And you'll really be also given some guidance around some of those psychosocial aspects. You know, quite frankly, sometimes people are frightened to engage in or re-engage in intimate relations with their partners because they don't trust their bodies anymore. Cardiac rehab will not only help you reduce, as I said, the possibility of a second heart event, but it will support you to come back into a more normal life and live well with your heart disease or as well as...
Yes, this is where the tie-in is back to those original risk factors. So
exactly.
You've coming right back to the end of the process. And I do like the phrase that you've used, and that is, while you may have been treated, you are not fixed. So I guess it comes down to us, with the support of all of the services that are available to us, to make sure that we are actively engaged in this process of getting ourselves fixed.
Absolutely. You have to be your own best advocate. By being your own best advocate, you'll not only work a bit harder on your heart health from a personal perspective, but you'll be a more engaged patient or visitor to your general practitioner or your cardiologist, and you'll be a more engaged community member in terms of doing and encouraging your local government area or your state government MP to actually work with you to make sure that the community you live in is as heart healthy as possible. And the great thing about a heart healthy community is it diabetes friendly community, a cancer friendly community, because these chronic diseases share a lot of common risk factors.
What is the most important message that you'd like to get across to our listeners today?
Go and have a heart health check. Go visit your GP. It's available to you if you're 45 and older, or 30 years and older if you're an Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander person. Go out and take advantage of it. Understand your risk, because it's only then that you can take action.
Fantastic. Thank you very much for joining the program today, Kerry. We've been listening to Kerry Doyle, the CEO of the Heart Foundation in New South Wales, and some very frank advice. Marvellous to hear from you, Kerry.
Thank you very much.
Loving you isn't the right thing to do. How can I ever change things that I feel? If I could.
Go your own way.
My next guest is Estelle Ryan. Estelle is the project manager of cardiac services for the Western New South Wales Local Area Health Service. Estelle, thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you, Susan.
Estelle, as well as being the project manager for such an important role, has also had a very long career in nursing. She's had a career of 30 years in nursing, mostly in critical care sections of hospitals. So I reckon you've seen an awful lot there, Estelle.
Yeah, over the years I have.
Let's focus now on the cardiac services themselves. And here we're talking about those that are delivered in the Central West. So is that Orange, Bathurst, Dubbo, is that right?
The majority of services are delivered in those locations, but we do have 38 hospitals and 50 primary and community health facilities.
That is where they are, but what are they? What do we mean by cardiac services?
So for cardiac services, there's a range of services from, I guess, primary health services to acute cardiology services, which are mostly delivered in our base hospital sites of Orange, Bathurst and Dubbo. And then we have four procedural sites, which are Mudgee, Parkes, Forbes and Cowra.
All right, so these are the places where somebody will go immediately. They have some sort of warning sign that worries them about their heart. Are they taken here in the first instance?
So what we recommend now is that if anybody has any symptoms suggestive of heart attack, that they call New South Wales Ambulance in the first instance. They now have life-saving medication, and with heart problems, time is everything. If they don't call an ambulance for some reason, then they could present to any of our 38 hospitals in the district and receive appropriate emergency care as required.
So what is likely to happen there? Are they immediately rushed through or are they triaged? How does that process work?
Yes, so every person that presents to one of our emergency departments would be triaged based on a criteria of urgency. And for somebody with symptoms of potential heart attack, they would go straight through to the department. They would be put on a cardiac monitor and they would receive a 12-lead ECG, and that 12-lead ECG can then be transmitted directly to a cardiologist depending on the findings.
Right. So these are the big screens that are around the hospital beds in emergency.
Yes, some of them are. And the ambulance also have that capacity now to transmit those ECGs directly to a cardiologist for expert interpretation and management.
I imagine that when people do get themselves to emergency, they're probably extremely anxious.
Yes, some of them are, and I guess that's part of the care that we give in those departments.
I guess there's no real typical sort of workflow for what happens next. So for listeners then, what can they expect will happen once they're in the emergency department? They've already had the screen that is showing their results and it's gone off to the cardiologist. What can they expect next?
Care for patients who are suspected of having heart attack is very well documented, and what they would expect is to have a set of bloods taken. So if you're having damage to your heart, that will show in a set of blood tests. They would also be asked to describe the history of their presentation, so their symptoms and the time of onset. So time is everything when we talk about heart muscle. They would have subsequent 12-lead ECGs if we're expecting that they have heart problems. And if the ECG demonstrates that the artery is totally blocked, then we would go on to deliver them some medications that would assist in unblocking that artery.
Surgery may or may not follow all of those sort of things, I guess.
Any patient who has actually had a heart attack, so where the artery has been either partially or totally blocked, will need to go on to have some sort of assessment of their coronary arteries, which is what we call an angiogram. And that is where dye is injected through the heart and we take some pictures. And currently that's procedure that you have at Orange, and then you would then go on to have either some stents in your heart or you may need bypass surgery.
Are the periods of stay very long if you've come with a heart attack and a blocked artery and, say, a stent?
The average length of stay for somebody who has a stent, for example, is probably only 2 to 3 days if they've had a heart attack, probably maximum of 4. And, of course, if you need bypass surgery, that could be up to 10 days to stay and you would need transfer to a metropolitan facility.
So of the various treatments then, so we're looking at a catalogue of cardiac services, what is the range of these cardiac services?
Besides the acute management that we just talked about, there are a range of people who would require assessment for risk factor modification, or they've presented to their general practitioner with some symptoms that might be concerning. And the services that we provide are things like stress tests, where you can walk on a treadmill and be attached to an electrocardiograph, and we can review how your heart performs under stress. We have echo services, which is like performing an ultrasound of the heart, and that looks at the muscle function of your heart. We also provide cardiac rehabilitation programs, which are a very important part of the care pathway for those people who do have a heart attack. And I guess those are the main range of services that we provide.
How long do you think people need to be monitored once they've had a surgical intervention?
What would normally happen is that after you've had one of these events, you would be referred back to your general practitioner within a week of discharge, and that would be for ongoing care. And you would also be referred back to a specialist within 1 month of having any sort of procedure. And then I guess it depends on how you're progressing.
I'm interested in following up this issue about cardiac rehabilitation because our earlier speaker, Kerry Doyle from the Heart Foundation, did make the point that surgery doesn't necessarily fix the problem forever, but that whatever risk factors contributed to the problem in the first place still actually needed a lot of attention afterwards. For instance, say smoking was involved or say high cholesterol was involved, would you focus on those kinds of things and help people through it?
Yes, we definitely would. So everything that we provide in the acute service, I guess I like to think of those as band-aids. So they will provide the care required to restore the blood flow, but it's actually the risk factors that cause the heart disease, and without modification of those risk factors, then you are at risk of going on to have further cardiac events. So the two main things that we tell people when they're being discharged is that, and these are the things that have been demonstrated to make a difference, is that they must take the medication that's been prescribed and that they must attend a cardiac rehabilitation program, and so every patient will be referred to one of those programs, and they come in a variety of forms depending on where you live and the services available.
One of the other things that Kerry Doyle mentioned was that Central West has quite a high proportion of people with heart disease compared to the average of New South Wales. This to me sounds like your facilities in the Central West are extremely busy.
Yes, that's correct. We are very busy and, you know, comparatively with some of our metropolitan cardiac centres, we're actually doing quite a significant amount of work.
Do you have the right level of resources?
I think that we do have the right level of resources. We certainly think about our service in a district perspective. What we try to do is deliver one service across many sites. Where we don't have the capability at one site, we aim to transfer within our district to be able to provide those services. I guess, Susan, it would be good to talk about some scenarios, I suppose. For example, the Bathurst listeners, if you were at home and you were having a heart attack, and you called the ambulance service, then they would come to your home, they would listen to your history, they would take a 12-lead ECG, and if it fit the criteria that their protocol asks for, they would transmit that ECG to a cardiologist. The cardiologist might say, given the history and the ECG findings, we will deliver you this medication that will help to dissolve the blood clot that's blocking the artery in your heart.
Does this all happen in the ambulance?
Yes, it does. Mm. In the ambulance or in your home or on the sporting field, for example.
Mm.
And then the ambulance protocol now is to actually bring these patients who are within safety, 90 minutes safe travel time, to the Orange Health Service where the cardiac catheter laboratory is available. So the medication doesn't always work. It's dependent on how long the clot's been forming. And so you might actually bypass Bathurst Hospital to come to Orange Hospital to make sure that you can go straight into that laboratory and have a stent if that's what's required to resolve the issue.
Oh, good. Communication is key to all of this, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And it's a system of care that's been set up by the state. I guess from my nursing history, I think that we used to say that it didn't pay to have cardiac disease if you lived west of the mountains, and we've really seen a lot of progress in the ability to deliver in our health services what people need when they have heart attacks. And so other than surgical intervention like bypass surgery or valve surgery, that we can actually provide those services now in Western New South Wales Area Health District.
Well, thank heavens for that.
Yes.
Now, Estelle, I know that you have been involved in another project called the Lighthouse Project. Tell us what that is.
So the Lighthouse Project is a project that came from the National Heart Foundation, and it's about improving the outcomes of Aboriginal patients who have what we call acute coronary syndrome, but is really about, you know, heart disease in our Aboriginal patients. Western New South Wales has more than 11% of Aboriginal people in the population, compared with the New South Wales state average of only 3.6%.
So why is it that the Aboriginal population are having this particular focus?
Really, it's about the morbidity and mortality statistics for Aboriginal people, in a way. So the life expectancy is quite different between Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal people. And there's a significant portion of Aboriginal people who have ischemic heart disease. And so the Lighthouse Project is really about, if you like, evening up the playing field and trying to close that gap, you know, in those health statistics.
Do you think that Aboriginal residents who are less inclined to go to a GP?
Look, I think historically there's been a lot of social dislocation for some of these groups, and there's definitely a level of mistrust in the hospital environment, I guess. And part of the Lighthouse Project is really about making sure that our clinicians are culturally competent and that our environment is welcoming and feels safe for our Aboriginal people to attend.
Do you think you're seeing some results of this project?
I think we're definitely seeing some results, particularly in the hospital environment. So, you know, we've run programs in making sure that we ask the question around Aboriginality, that we don't make assumptions based on how people look. We've definitely provided some artwork in and cultural spaces that are for our Aboriginal patients to visit. I think that we've made our health service environments more welcoming. We've thought about the delivery of education in an appropriate way.
Is there anything else that you think is extremely important for people to know, Estelle?
Thanks, Susan. I think that the take-home messages for people who have symptoms of heart attack are don't dismiss it, even if you think it is indigestion, and we hear that a lot. Make sure that you call an ambulance as a priority. Don't worry about whether it turns out to be your heart or it doesn't. And if you do have heart disease, please take your medication and attend cardiac rehabilitation, because these will be the things that make a difference.
Fabulous. Estelle, thank you very much for joining our program today.
Thanks, Susan.
We've been listening to Estelle Ryan. Estelle is the Project Manager of Cardiac Services for the Western Region of New South Wales Local Health Service.
The heart is a blue. Shoots up through the stony ground, there's no room, no space to rent in this town. You're out of luck, and the reason that you had to care, the traffic is stuck, and you're not moving anywhere. You thought you found a friend, take you out of this place, someone you can lend a hand in return for grace. It's a beautiful day. Sky falls, you feel like it's a beautiful day. To let it get away on the road. But you got no destination. Love is down. Even if that doesn't ring true, you've been all over, and it's been all over you. It's a beautiful day to let it get away. It's a beautiful day.
Next guest is Alwyn. Alwyn lives in Bathurst, and back in 2012 he had a heart attack. and it was followed by triple bypass surgery. Alwyn, what happened?
Well, I was in the city centre. I'd just finished lunch with my mate and his partner. We got up to go out because my mate wanted a cigarette. I started to walk and then I said, I feel dizzy and not well. So my mate grabbed a chair and stuck a chair under me. His partner went and bought a bottle of sports drink and she gave that to me and I sculled that. Mm. And then they realised there was something going on. Then I said, no, I feel okay now. And we got up and we walked outside, up the steps near Terry White's, up the steps, then outside. Then I just collapsed.
Mm.
I just hit the ground. My mate couldn't get any response from me, so he started CPR. While his partner rang AAA, got the ambulance to me, rushed me to ICA here in Bathurst. I was taken to Orange for an angiogram. After that, I was brought back on the helicopter and took to Royal Prince Alfred in Sydney.
Mm.
Then from after that, triple bypass.
How long did you have to stay in hospital?
I was in the hospital for 2.5 weeks.
My gosh. It sounds like it was a good thing that your mate knew CPR.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. He saved my life.
Because
I was dead. When I hit the ground, fell to the ground the first time, I was passed away. I was dead.
So do you know what happened when you were in the ambulance or were you still out of it?
Going to the hospital, no. I was still not with it. Put it this way, I was off the planet still. Didn't know what was going on or where I was. Or the only thing I know was going from CSI or whatever it is.
Yeah, the cardiac.
The emergency department.
Oh, the emergency. Yep.
To Orange to have the angiogram.
And what did angiogram show? Do you remember?
Blocked arteries.
Right.
Yeah, blocked arteries that they couldn't clear. That's why I had to go to
Prince Alfred
to have the
bypass.
So
you had your surgery there, did you?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. And how are you feeling? Were you...
Not good. Not good. On the helicopter, apparently, I passed away another 3 times. When I got to RPA, apparently, I was rushed straight to surgery. To have the operation after the wonderful ride in the helicopter.
Pity you don't remember much about it.
No, I was really...
In a bad way, yeah?
Yeah, very much sedated. I don't really know too much about it. After that, I knew all about it after the operation. Walking around every time I sneezed or coughed or farted, I'd feel this pain in me. Oh, and it was a horrible pain. The pain in my chest was after, because they crack you open.
Oh, right.
They cut you open in the sternum and open it up so that they can get the heart out to do the actual surgery.
Mm.
They actually manhandle the heart.
Good heavens.
Yeah, that's what most of the pain is. Because your heart's so soft, and when they pull it out, they take a vein out of the inside of your leg and chop it up in 3 pieces and cut out one piece, put it on, cut out the next piece and put it on, stitch it on, do the next piece. It's all done with microsurgery so they know what they're doing or seeing what they're doing. And because they manhandle the heart, it bruises it.
Mm-hmm.
That's where most of the pain comes from. It still comes from where they have actually opened the sternum up. And, yeah, that's pretty much it. After the surgery, the nurses were fantastic. I've got no complaints about Royal Prince Alfred. They were a very good hospital, very switched on. Even though it is a teaching hospital, every one of the doctors are fantastic.
Now, Alwyn, when you were in RPA, you'd come out of surgery, and you said that the nurses did a good job of looking after you. And this was round about a time that you were supposed to be going to a concert, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I had tickets to go and see Metallica. Sorry if I say it this way, I was pissed off because I couldn't go because I was in hospital, RPA. Two of the nurses, I overheard them talking about the concert, and I turned around and I said, well, I got two tickets here if you want to buy them. I said, I bought them for $400 each. I said, I'll sell them to use for $250. Well, the girls went, yeah, all right, no worries, bought them. And one of the girls I befriended, and she still keeps in contact with me. And, yeah, she was really great to me. She said, if I go to Sydney anytime, don't get accommodation. She said, come and stay at my place, I'll spoil you.
It's definitely above and beyond the call of duty.
Yeah.
What did you do for Christmas?
Well, at that time I missed Christmas. The two nurses I'd sold the tickets to had come in with this little Christmas cake, and we sat down and we had Christmas lunch together, the whole three of us, and it was really good. Made me feel really good. And the staff and the doctors in the RPA were really fantastic. You do what you're told and you get what you want. That's, I suppose that's a part of life. You do as you're told, you get what you want. And that's the biggest thing I've had through my life. It's no good fighting it, otherwise you're not going to heal properly. You know, I went with the flow, listened to the doctors, listened to the nurses, listened to the physios, done all the physio work.
Had you had any problems before your heart attack?
No, not really, no.
So it just came right out of the blue?
Just came out of the blue, yeah.
So that was in 2012?
Yep.
So how are you managing now? Do you have to have ongoing treatment or...?
I have to see Dr. Ben here in Bathurst probably once every 12 months.
Right. Has he told you there are things that you can and can't do?
Oh, just take it easy. Don't overdo things. He said your heart will let you know what you can do and what you can't do. Because when I go to him every 12 months, they put me through a stress test to see how my heart is going.
And what's the stress test? What do you have to do?
They wire you up to an ECG first, and then they take you over and wire you up to this other machine. Then they put you on a treadmill. And on that treadmill, while you're on that treadmill for 90 minutes, they take you off and you quickly go back over to the ECG so they can wire you up real quick to see what your body's doing after the treadmill operation, because your heart's working fast, see?
Yeah, yeah.
And they want to take a reading of what it's doing and what it's not doing. That's what I gather is what it is.
How are you feeling now?
I feel good, yeah.
So are you now back to what you would have been before, do you think?
My knee slowed me down, but otherwise I'm good.
Right.
Because I had a knee replacement. It'll be 3 years this August. That's all right, the knee replacement. That's fantastic. It's no problem.
So you're able to look after yourself and just have a normal social life and all the rest of it, aren't you?
Yeah, yep.
That's a relief.
I'm with Catholic Healthcare through my aged care. Everything gets done for me. I get spoiled.
Yeah. Did you have to change your diet or had you been a smoker or anything?
Yeah, well, I don't smoke anymore, so that's good because I used to be. I changed my diet.
I bet the doctor told you off about smoking.
Yeah. Yeah, he did. And cut me portions down, so that's all right. I seen a dietitian about doing all that. That was really good. I've seen a lady up the hospital here in Bathurst about smoking and giving up smoking, how to manage it. I manage it real well. Just went cold turkey and I've not looked back.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Well, you're alive and well. This is a very good thing.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, if you were going to give advice to anybody about ways of looking after yourself, what would that be?
It would be change your diet, portion your diet into small portions instead of big portions. Don't smoke. Just watch what spices you eat in your food, because people don't realise that the spices, or some spices that you put in your food, can harden your arteries. Haven't been a chef, you know that.
So you used to be a chef?
Yeah.
That's a hectic job. That's a high-stress job, isn't it?
Very, very. I think that was half the problem with me heart attack, the stress from that. Just caught up with me in the end and kicked me on the bum.
Well, you're doing good now. This is all a fine thing.
Yes, I'm doing it okay. I'm doing fine now. I walk around the block probably twice a day. I get back here, I'm short of breath, so I just, next time I go around, I take it easy.
Yeah.
Don't go around as quick as I should. But it's all good.
Alwyn, it's been a real pleasure having you share your story with us today. And I realise that you've been through an extraordinary time and doing well. So thank you very much for joining our program today.
Thank you very much.
On the turn of a friendly card.
No, the game never ends
when your whole world depends on the turn of a friendly card.
There's a sign in the desert that lies to the west,
where you can't tell the night from the sunrise.
Horses and all the king's men have prevented the fall of the unwise, for they think it will make their lives easier, and God knows up till now it's been hard. But the game never ends
when your whole world depends on the turn of a friendly card.
But a pilgrim must follow in search of a shrine as he enters inside the cathedral.
You've been listening to Cool Climate Living. I'm Susan Lacey. Join me again next time. Bye for now.